So I get asked a lot, being in my 40s, how do I manage to continue to perform all season long at the level that I do? Well, you know, it's a lot of hard work, but I have a lot of help. Triple Threat Performance has been putting this old body back together again for years. I keep tearing it down, and they keep putting me back together. And now, apart from the physical therapy side, I got involved in their athletic training program. And honestly, I don't think the Mountains stand a chance this season. So if you're in the Phoenix area and you're interested in upping your game, check them out at www.ttpaz.com. That's ttpaz.com. Now let's roll into the next episode.
Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by Triple Threat Performance and the Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today we got a really interesting guest on. We have Rocky Jacobson, and he's going to share some of his elk hunting stories with us. And I'm sure we're going to learn a thing or two, not just be entertained. Rocky's full of information, and he's you know, one of the forefathers of elk calling, and been in the business for, you know, as long as there was a business of elk calling. So, how's it going, Rocky?
Good. I'm doing great.
Good, man.
You know,
good to hear.
It's been a kind of a funny year for weather, and today we got a really pretty sunshiny day up here. Actually, last night we were sitting on a bear bait, and It snowed like 3 inches.
Wow. I wish it
yeah,
snowed.
Crazy. Crazy. Yeah.
But, we're like 110 today.
Last night while we were sitting on the bear bait, I wished it was 110 up there. We were shaking so bad it was like, holy cow, we can't even shoot a bow.
Yeah. I've been there a couple of times. I think one time I may have actually turned into an icicle in South Dakota one time. But we were seeing so many deer that day, like I couldn't get out of the stand. It was crazy. I was sit up in a tree stand, and the wind was blowing, I don't know, probably 20, 25 miles an hour sideways while it was snowing. So my whole right side was just, I looked like Frosty the Snowman on one side, and the other side was completely dry. It was crazy.
Yeah.
I remember, and I was wearing some serious gear too. I had some, like, probably 25 pounds worth of clothes on, and I was still just miserable
yeah.
cold. But yeah, it was just one of those days, man, that deer just didn't stop walking by. I was like, oh, I can't get out of stand. I don't care how cold I am. There's gonna be a big buck here soon.
Some of the things we put up with just to go hunting, huh?
Right.
Yeah. But it's all worth it in the long run.
Yeah, that's for sure. My wife was like, you're crazy to do stuff like that. I'm like, you wear high heels so you can look good, and they kill you.
That's true. Yeah. My wife says, why do you have to always drive so dang far to go hunting all the time when you got hunting in your backyard? And I said, well, because it's not like hunting, but it's no different than you drove clear to Lewiston, Idaho, and 2 hours away to get your hair cut, and you could have done it right here in Kamiai.
Oh, I didn't know you lived in Kamiai.
Yeah, you know where that is?
Wow, you know what? That's where I used to hunt, up there.
Really?
We base ourselves out of there, because one of my cameramen, my original cameraman, Levi Paul, you might know the name. I don't know, because it's a small town. He is from there. And his cousins all worked for, I can't think of the lodge name over there.
Flying B
Ranch. And so every once in a while, you know, every year we'd go up and, you know, we get the guys together, we go up, they had horses and stuff, and they take us up, and we go up there, but I guess, what would that be, the Selway?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
What year was that?
Before the wolves got too bad.
So
I don't know.
Back in the early early 90s?
I would say early 2000s. I remember the last time we were there, I was actually there for a bear hunt, matter of fact. And I shot two bear. It was a great hunt. But the wolves were really already bad at that point. I actually was just telling the story to somebody else. I was walking down a trail, and I seen a big elk track, and I'm like, wow, the bull just came through here because it was fresh. You know, it was like muddy and wet. And I was like, oh, crazy. Anyway, so I went down the trail, didn't think nothing of it. It came back down the same trail on a couple hours, not even an hour and a half later, because I went into the stand and I shot a bear on a bait like within 45 minutes of being in there. And I walked back down that trail and there was a wolf track right on top of that elk print. And I was like, ah, yeah, that's a little unnerving.
Yeah,
but
gotta love it.
Yeah. Yeah, but I haven't hunted there in a long time. Probably I will be in Idaho this year, but I'm hunting the other side of the state. I'm hunting the southeast.
You know that Selway country, Locksaw country. That's Unit 10 and Unit 12. Used to have the most elk, the biggest bulls, the best hunting of anywhere in the United States. They went from 17,000 elk in those two, less than. Well, approximately 300 elk left is all that's left in those two units. They have shut the seasons down.
Yeah, somebody
down.
Else was telling me that. That's
yeah,
crazy.
They have shut the seasons down to where you can't even get tags anymore. And granted, it's not all the wolves' problem, but 90% of it is caused by wolves. You know, the
that's
other part
nuts.
Is just habitat. A lot of the brush has grown up so big, no fires, no logging. And the elk herds have just, you know, the elk have just left. It's not that they have been killed totally off by the wolves, but they just leave the country because there's nothing there. Somebody's hunting them all the time, especially wolves, and there's just no food for them.
Yeah. So, see, that's what I, that's a conversation I was having with somebody. Said that it's just so thick there that there's nothing for them to eat.
Yeah.
Wow.
I remember.
That's crazy. That sucks. That sucks because I remember there was, you know, hearing about how, you know, how awesome the elk hunting was over there. We've seen quite a bit of elk and deer the last time I was there. But again, like I said, it's been 11 years since I've been up in that country.
Yeah.
But, so.
Pretty country, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Gorgeous.
It's really
yeah.
crap ton
you
of bear in there. Oh, my God. There were so many bear.
Yeah. I know you mentioned, you know, that I'm from Kami. I actually grew up in Orofino, which is downriver west of here, 21 miles. You know, I grew up in that country and basically elk hunted pretty much everywhere you can think of in Clearwater and Nez Perce County.
Nice.
Yeah.
You know, I
still
remember something happening a while back over there, too, in that same area that I want to say it was probably like 2005, 2006, like you guys had a bad case of like blue tongue or something, and it killed off a crap ton of whitetail and some mule deer.
It did.
I remember we were supposed to go hunting that. Me and Levi were going to go up and hunt by his dad's place and for whitetail. And I guess they had some giant die-off, and we're like, they said they were like picking them up off the side of the road, and like throwing them in dump trucks. Like how many deer died?
They were. It was really bad because a lot of the deer would die along the edge of the roads, and they just lay there and stank. My goodness, this country smelled so bad for a long time. But
yeah,
most of the dying occurred in the low country, and the water was kind of not a lot of water in that area at this time. We had a dry year, and the deer concentrated on what ponds were there, and those little gnats that they get that larva from formed on the water, and boy, it just wiped them out.
Yeah, jeez.
You know, it's come back really good, though. We got plenty of deer again, but we're just lacking on mature big bucks again. Idaho had way too long a season. They, you know, they start 1st of September and go clear to the end of December, and they just wiped out our big bucks. Got too much publicity for it, and you know, hunters come from everywhere, and it just slowed up our big buck population pretty bad. But they shut her down this year, shortened our season up. Yeah, still good hunting seasons though, but they just shortened them up.
Yeah, I've been wanting to go up there and shoot a whitetail because it's one. I think it's. I have two left to get my whitetail super slam, and I need a North Pacific buck in Idaho. That part of Idaho falls in that region, and then I still need a Seminole whitetail, which is in Florida.
It's still good hunting. You're just not going to see the 170 plus bucks as much as you used to.
Yeah, I'd be happy with 140, 150.
Yeah, the 130s are real common, but
you start getting
into the 140s, 150s, there's a few around, but this year might be a great year because we've had a lot of moisture and a lot of green grass growing. It might be a good year for growth.
Of course, because I don't have the time to get out there. I'm actually going to be in Idaho in October, but like I said, I want to be in that southeastern part of the state, basically. I picked up I have an elk and deer tag, and we'll see what happens.
What's
your unit? What is that? Texas Canyon, I think.
Yeah, that's 76 Diamond Creek.
Maybe. I don't remember the numbers.
Yeah, that's
something like that.
That'd be 76. 66A is Tex Creek in that area there, and that's a first come first serve on your tags though. So when they come up for sale, jump on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Oh, I already got the tag, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I got the tag already, but. I'll be curious to see how we do. My buddy Chad Roberts and I are gonna go up there and give her hell and see what happens. But,
yeah.
Anyway, I know you have quite a bit of stories for us. I'd like you to kind of share your Arizona hunt because I know you had a little bit of a rough go at it, and we talked a little bit here before we got on the podcast that I want to bring up some interesting points. I know you had it. You got a really good unit, but it happened to be on one of those years where they killed a bunch of these shoulder hunts and whatnot and kind of screwed you up a little bit.
Yeah, you know, and we drew Arizona tag, a friend of mine, Jim Brennan. Some people will know who Jim Brennan is because he shot one of the largest whitetail bucks with his bow, scored like 243, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
That heck of a whitetail. But him and I drew that tag in Arizona for 7 West. And we drew it for the season like the 16th through the 24th of September. And never been there before. So we called around and asked some different people. And, you know, that's really a good way when you're going to a new area is to call maybe the local fishing game and get a hold of their biologists in that area. And, you know, they don't always know everything, but they do know which areas probably hold more elk than others. And, give you kind of a general direction to go, but usually in September, like the 16th on, the elk are bugling anyway, so when you get there, what I like to do is in the nighttime before I start hunting, drive around a little bit in the dark and bugle and figure out where there's elk at, because they'll come out of those mountains and come down to those big flats, and you know, they'll feed all night long and bugle and gives you an idea where there might be some elk. But I like to look for the terrain specifically, you know, like northeastern slopes where there's lots of water, good heavy timber cover where they got places to bed during the day. And so we got there and we did that. We drove around quite a bit and located some elk, and daylight comes and we started in on them. And one thing you'll know that when you start working an elk, right off the bat in the mornings, they're usually in their feeding grounds all night long, and at daylight, they start moving back up. And a lot of people will start calling to your elk right there off the bat, and the elk, they just took off and run from me every time I bugle. Well, that's natural. They're heading back to their bedding grounds, and they're going to get up to where they like to go. So I like to follow them. I like to head up in the morning and just kind of creep along with them and off to the side, keeping the wind in my favor. And eventually they'll come to a transition period where they got to kind of mill around and they're getting ready to bed down. And boy, that's the time to fire up and get some good elk activity. But, you know, Jim and I finally got a big bull. We were looking for good bulls to shoot. We didn't want to just shoot anything because that's a special tag. And the wind was blowing super hard that day, and it was hard to hear elk bugle. And got a bull to answer, and this 300 class bull come in, and we could hear another one behind it bugling, and he sounded like a bigger bull. He didn't bugle hard. He bugled those heavy growls of, oh, you know, and we said, that's got to be a good one. So we let the little bull go and worked our way up to the top of the ridge and kind of come onto a flat. And boy, the top of the trees were just a whistling with wind. You could just watch him shake back and forth. And it was hard to really pinpoint this bull exactly where he's coming from. And all of a sudden to the right, we looked up and here was a big cow elk standing in a shooting lane at about 40 yards. And right behind it, you hear a bugle. And then all of a sudden the top of this tree just started whipping back and forth. I'm going, man, that's a little lower than just the tops of the trees from the wind blowing. And about that time a bugle come right from that spot, and I bugled a couple times, and he'd answer, and then I cow called, and of course he stepped out into that shooting lane following that cow. It was a 40-yard shot, stopped perfectly broadside, a little bit quartering away, and Jim had it all figured out, the range, and he let that arrow fly, and it looked like it was going absolutely perfect, and about 4 to 5 feet before it got to the elk, it looked like that arrow just did a complete sideways turn. And what we figured was the wind was blowing so hard right where that elk is at, it just turned that arrow sideways. And it hit where it's supposed to go in, is right behind the shoulder. But I think it went in at such a side angle that the arrow hit that scapula and slid alongside and up into the brisket area, making it look like it was a perfect shot. But we didn't get any blood. We trailed that bull. In that country there, you can see underneath for hundreds of yards without any brush underneath. And we made 360 circles for up to 3 miles looking for that bull, and we never did come across him. So we don't know what happened, but what a magnificent bull. He was pushing over 400 inches and just super long thirds and heavy mass, and it's really heartbreaking to lose an animal like that. But you know, things happen, and that's just the way it is. But it's horrible to set up on an elk like that and have everything happen so good, and then the shot doesn't come together. You know,
that's,
I can remember
all of us, unfortunately.
It does, you know, and. The main thing is, as long as you've done everything that you can do to your power, practice, know the yardage, shoot well, and something like that happens, you've done your best, and there's nothing else you can do about it. But, you know, you go out there and don't know how to shoot a bow, you don't practice, and just fling arrows at an animal and then wound them, then that's wrong. So, yeah. You know, as long as you're doing what you're supposed to do and stuff happens like that, it's tough to swallow, but it's going to happen to the best of you.
Yep, unfortunately.
Yeah, but...
So did you end up getting a bull, or did you go home empty-handed?
You know, I went home empty-handed. So did Jim. Jim actually felt so bad about that bull that he punched his tag. He thought in his own mind that, I killed that bull, I'm done. So he punched his tag and quit hunting. And just went calling for me the next. We had like 3 days left. And, you know, and I was being a little fussy. I wanted to shoot a 370 bull. And I just didn't get to see any. A lot of 330s. And not that I called every 330 I seen into shooting range. But I had a couple that I could have killed. And I let go. But You know, in hindsight, you look back, go, why wouldn't I shoot a 330 bull? But, you know, you don't get to kill the big ones, but you let the little ones go.
It's that's for sure.
Yeah, you know, consequences you have to suffer if you let the little ones go and end up going home empty-handed. But we had a great hunt, had a lot of good bugling, a lot of good footage, and can't complain. So it was a good hunt.
Nice.
So what would you say is your most, most memorable hunt, your most favorite hunt that you ever had?
You know, I've thought about that several times I've got two hunts. I'm going to kind of tell you about the first one, and it's a memorable hunt. It wasn't my favorite hunt, but a very memorable one. Back in the early 80s, when I used to archery hunt quite a bit back then too, but every once in a while you didn't fill your tag with a bow, but you could still rifle hunt in Idaho. And my brother wanted to go hunting that year, so we decided we were going to rifle hunt together because he didn't archery hunt. And I had just bought a brand new Toyota pickup, single cab, and it had about 3,000 miles on it. My brother and I were heading up this ridge where we'd been many times before, and the road was muddy, and it had got real cold that night, and the mud puddles were froze over solid with ice, and you'd break through them, and you'd get a lot of mud and stuff on the tires, on the windshield. We went to the end of the road, and seen a few elk tracks cross the road. We got to the end of the road and turned around and headed back down, and I was watching off to my left in a clear cut, and I spotted a bull. So I stopped the vehicle and put it in neutral and sat there with the rig idle. Well, I reached up and turned the key off finally because it was shaking so bad with the holding the binoculars, and I was looking at that bull, and I said, dang, that's a pretty nice fixed point for on public land. And we were trying to figure out how to get to him and get to him quick because we had we might have had an hour of daylight left for that evening. So I just reached up and shut the key off and opened the door. We grabbed our guns, both of us did, and down the hillside we went, trying to get to another ridge top where we had a 400-yard shot. And we get to the bottom of the draw, and I hear this bang, bang. I thought, man, somebody's shooting at my elk. And my brother tapped me on the shoulder, and he goes, I don't think that's a gunshot. Look back behind you. Here come my Toyota down over the hill behind me. And it was bouncing off stumps and hitting the stumps. And it'd rear up in the air and almost flip over, and then it'd come back down and then shake loose and go another 30 yards and bang into another stump. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. I thought I put the emergency brake on, but evidently in the excitement, I forgot to. So anyway, the pickup come to a big rest on a kind of an old skid road there, and sat there, and it was kind of teetering. And I said, well, nothing we can do now. We might as well just crawl to the top ridge and see if that bull's still there. So we crawled up there, looked across the draw, and here's that bull standing out in wide open, looking at that pickup because it made all that noise. And I just dropped my knees, and it was a 400-yard shot, and shooting a 7 mag, and had the old Parker Hale. That was quite a gun in those days. And I let the bullet fly, and that bull just dropped right there. And I turned to my brother real quick, and I go, here, take the flashlight. You go gut that bull. I'm going to go back because we're going to have to spend the night. Said, I'm going to have to get that pickup settled in, get our gear gathered up because it's strung out all over the hillside. Said, you go gut him. Get him. Just get the guts out. And he looked at me okay. And I started walking away, and all of a sudden he shoots. And I turn around and look at him, and I go, what are you shooting at? And he said, the bull. And I go, okay, well, go. I thought maybe the bull got back up and he had shot at it. So, I mean, we're talking like 10 minutes of daylight left. So he takes off down over the hill, and I go the other way to the pickup. I get to the pickup and gather up all our hunting stuff, and I start to build a lean-to and gather up firewood because we're going to spend the night. and no sleeping bags, no nothing. And so it's going to be a cold night. Well, when I got to the pickup, I could look back across the draw there, and I could see the flashlight. And his flashlight would move from one point and then go to another point like 50 yards away. And I go, what the heck is he doing? So I yelled across the draw, and I said, are you okay? And the sound come back across the draw, stung in the shoe. And I went, stung in the shoe? What the heck is he talking about? And I yelled again, are you okay? And he come back again, stung in the shoe. And I thought, well, he must have stepped in a yellow jacket's nest, but why would he say stung in the shoe? So about half hour went by, and he's still over there. And I'm going, man, it only takes 15 minutes to pull guts out of an elk. Yeah, he should have been done by now. And I had a big roaring fire going, and I just didn't want to walk over there. It was a long, hard walk. And right. All of a sudden, here come the flashlight down the hill a little bit, and then it stopped, and I yelled again. I said, what's taking you so long? Are you okay? And again, he hollered back, stung in the shoe. Anyway, I just gave up. I said, I don't know what he's talking about. Have no clue. So about a half hour went by, and here comes the flashlight down the hill and then comes up the draw. And he gets to the pickup, and there's a big old roaring fire going. And he is just covered in blood from one end to the other. And I said, you don't have to crawl inside those things to gut them. You can just go up to your armpits, and that's all you need to do. And he said, yeah, it's a fine thing for you to say. I go, well, what's this stung in the shoe you keep hollering back? And he goes, I wasn't hollering stung in the shoe. I said I was working on number two. And for some reason, it sounded like stung in the shoe. And I said, what are you talking about working on number two? And he goes, well, I shot a bull too. And I go, when? He said, when I shot and you told me to go and you never gave me a chance to explain that a bull stepped out and I shot one too. I go, you're kidding me. He said, no, he said, it's a big 6 point. And he goes, it's even bigger than yours. I go, you got to be kidding. So I said, well, in the morning we'll get up and we'll quarter them all and we'll pack them all back down to the road. But I said, right now we're stuck. We're not going anywhere, and we're 50 miles from any nearest road to get help.
Oh, jeez.
So we went to sleep that night, and, I mean, it got cold. And I'd change sides. I'd be on the front side near the fire, and Kelly, my brother, would get on the back side for a while, and then he'd freeze, and then we'd jump over each other and get near the fire. And so this went on all night. Didn't get much sleep. And, well, daylight come, and I was thinking about, well, let's go get the elk taken care of and then start hiking out. About that time, I could hear like a dozer running. But across the canyon behind us, I go, huh, wonder what somebody's doing out here with a dozer. So I said, told Kelly, I said, you go ahead and head to the elk, and I'm going to go up the top ridge and see what's going on. Well, I crawled the ridge, and I could see a dozer building fire trail around one of the clear cuts. So I thought, shoot, I'm going to hike over and see who it is. So I hike over there, and happened to be a good friend that I knew. His name was Franklin Birch, and he was a cat operator for Potlatch Corporation, who I worked for at the time, Fallen Timber. And told him what had happened. He said, hop on. So I got on the cat, and he went cross country on that cat, and got right to my pickup and hooked a winch to it and sucked it up out of there and got to the road. And of course, the radiator and stuff was caved in, and he hooked the winch to a piece of here and there, straightened it all out, and he said, fire it up. So I fired it up and got a little fan ticking, so we got that straightened out. And he said, oh, you'll make her home with that truck now. I said, okay. So he leaves, and I go down the ridge in the pickup, and there's a skid trail that leads right up the draw to where those elk were laying. And I told myself, I said, heck, I can't hurt this pickup anymore. So I dukes a hazard it up over the crossbar ditches that they put in those skid trails, and I was jumping them and flinging mud.
Oh, God.
Back in those days, you could go anywhere you wanted. They didn't care when you're logging, so. I drove right to the elk, and we loaded both those bulls in whole and headed to town. And we went up and downtown parading with these two big bulls in the back like you always did in the old days. Everybody accused us of roadkill because the front of my pickup looked like it just was smashed up elk everywhere.
Oh, I bet.
That's a hunt I'll never forget. You know, it was kind of cool. And back those days, Toyota had a commercial where you jump up in the air and you throw your arms off to the side like spread eagle, and you go Toyota. Toyota, you asked for it. You know, so I did that. Took a picture of it, sent it into Toyota, and they didn't give me a new pickup or anything, but it was kind of a fun hunt. But you know, my most memorable hunt, and I've been on a lot of elk hunts, and I guided for many years. I actually owned my own outfit and business in Oregon for 13 years, but there's a lot of hunts that I can remember and enjoyed and had a lot of fun and killed a lot of elk myself. But my daughter was wanting to elk hunt quite a bit, and she was growing up, and she shot bows a lot, and she shot guns a lot. And I took her elk hunting a few times, and she just didn't connect the first few times. And then one year we got together again, and she was married at that time, and finally got away on a week hunt with me, and we got this bull going, and it's in an area we've hunted many times. And he was screaming pretty good, but he wouldn't come. He was just kept moving off. So I knew he had cows with him. And pretty soon I could hear another elk hunter bugling off to our right. And it was kind of like, God, I got to get there before he gets there. So we moved up on the elk, and the elk kind of got up on top of this flat ridge where he could look down and see everything coming. And there was no way we could slip in. And I had a little video camera with me on a tripod, and I told Misty, I said, you go up there to that big old white fir right there and just sit there. And so I set the camera up facing her and kind of facing up the hillside, and I just walked off away from the camera the opposite direction, cow calling. And then I threw in a little bull bugle like I stole the cows. And all of a sudden you hear this, wah! He was mad. And you could hear him coming down the hill, and he was coming fast and hard. So I kind of moved back towards the camera, and you could see him come through the trees. He was headed right at the camera, and he stopped, and he let out a bugle, and I hear this bow go shunk, right in the middle of his full bugle. And the bow goes right up the hill, and I looked over at Misty, and she's sitting there shaking, and she got her thumbs up, and so I finally walked up to her real quiet. While I'm walking up to it, I could hear the bull coughing. And I said, you must have got a good shot. And she goes, how do you miss 6 yards? I go, well, I said, you can do it, but I said, you shouldn't. And she said, I just pinwheeled him. So we've sat in there talking a little bit real quiet, and pretty soon you hear the ground kicking. He laid down and was doing the dying kicks. He was about 75 yards from it. So I let her get up, and I had no clue what kind of bull it was. I just knew it was a bull, and it was bugling. And got up, let her do all the tracking, and pretty soon she found her broken off arrow. And we got up on the flat, and she started walking a little bit further forward than what I was. And I looked to my left, and I could see a tip of a horn sticking up. And I whistled at her, and I said, yeah, I think you need to come back here and look. So she backed up a little bit, and there's the blood. And she turned, and she seen the tip of that horn, and you could just see the tears come in her eyes, like, dang, I finally did it. And then when I walked up on that bull, I just looked at her, and I said, I don't think you realize what you just did. You're just looking at a 350-class bull on public land. And nice. She goes, no. And I said, that is a monster bull, just a monster. And it was such a fun hunt to share that with my daughter and see her kill her first bull, and it's a big one. And I said, I don't know how you're ever going to top that in public land hunting. And she really appreciated the hunt. It was fun. To carry this story on a little further, throughout the years, I kept the set of horns in my shed here in Kamei, because she didn't have a place to keep them in the house she was living in. And I was planning on mounting that elk for her. I was a taxidermist too. Well, in the year of 2015, which was about 5 years later, Kamei had those big wildfires come through. Mm-hmm. And the wildfires wiped out 74 homes in this valley, and mine was one of them.
Oh,
and, yep, it wiped out everything I owned. I never got anything out of it. And all my mounts and Misty's elk rack was in there, and it just burned them to powder. There was nothing left, you know. And boy, that was hard to call her and tell her that her elk head was gone, you know. Mm. But anyway, I took her out that fall again, and she connected on a bull even bigger. I couldn't believe it.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Corey must be jealous.
I don't know how Corey could ever be jealous of many elk and big elk he's ever killed, you know.
I know.
Yeah. But those are my two memorable and favorite hunts. There's a lot of them that I can go on and on about, but those stick in my mind really well. So,
yeah,
pretty cool
hunts.
Yeah,
that's something else. That Toyota story, that was out there.
that was kind of a wild one. You know, I've been.
Sounds like something I would do.
Yeah.
Yeah. The truck's exploding. Who gives a shit? Let's go for it.
Yeah, I'm still going. You know, I ended up having to total that truck because it bent the frame pretty bad. So it wasn't fixable when I got done with it. Lots of stories if a guy wants to hear them throughout the year. Like, you know, I started elk hunting when I was really young. My dad had an elk camp, and I can remember going out with him when I was 7-8 years old and just drooling at the bits wanting to be able to shoot an elk someday myself. And when I turned 12 years old, I never looked back. I've killed elk every year since I was 12 years old, and some with a rifle and some with bows. And I started bow hunting in 1967 and really didn't get proficient at killing elk until about 1974, somewhere in there, 73. Corey was born in 1975, and I remember putting him on my pack frame and packing him around during archery season. He probably got to see more elk bugled in and killed by the time he was 7 years old than most people have ever seen in their lifetime.
I bet.
You can see where Corey Jacobson gets the thrill of chasing elk.
Yeah, well, he's given you props, so to speak, many, many, many times in our conversations of why he is who he is today. So
Well, we happen to live in an area where elk were in our backyard, so it wasn't a big deal for us to go elk hunting at any given time. And I can remember when I was guiding in Oregon, I would come home and still have 6 or 7 days left in Idaho to elk hunt for myself. And Corey, he'd already been out every night after school and on weekends. He knew where every elk was. And I'd get home and he goes, "Dad," and "I know where a big 6-point is. Let's go get him." So he'd guide me over there and call it in for me.
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Good. Well, if you got a couple more minutes, you want to share one more story with us, that'd be awesome.
Okay. Yeah. You know, one thing that a lot of people have problems with is when you go to a new area, it's hard to figure out where to go. And I drew a New Mexico tag in unit 23, never been there before. And so I called a few guys that I know that live down there, and anybody can call Fish and Game, and they can call their biologists and call your local archery shops. A lot of times those archery dealers, they will tell you who the guy is that knows the areas and know where elk are. So I did all my homework there, but still didn't know the terrain. I drove down on, I think it was like a day or two before season opened, and I just spent a lot of time driving, just looking at canyons, not getting out hiking, just kind of circling the area in a complete circle and learning how the drainages ran. And then I got my Onyx maps out and my telephone with Onyx maps, and I started looking for water holes, because in New Mexico and Arizona, water holes is where elk concentrate, because there's just not a lot of natural water in those two states. So I found a water hole, and this story is kind of cool, because I got to that water hole opening morning, and I seen a 360-plus bull. I wanted him pretty bad, and I tried to get in on him. Of course, he faded off into the sunset and gone, and you know how that works. And so I started following that bull a little bit that evening, trying to figure out where he was going, and I come to this fence line, and I go, man, if they put a lot of money into this fence, and I come to a corner, and here the sign says Arizona-New Mexico state line. I'm going, you got to be kidding me. I'm right here on the state line, and these elk are jumping into Arizona. And I was
That's crazy.
Got it. I said, and Unit 27, you know where that is in Arizona. That's the wilderness country.
Absolutely.
That's got some monster bulls in it. So I was kind of a little bit bummed. So the next day I got up, and the elk were still bugling on the Arizona side, and I said, well, I'm going to go find someplace else. So I started to leave, and I went probably about 10 miles, and this white Ford pickup pulls up alongside me, and I go, Dennis Howell, what are you doing over here? Dennis Howell is one of my pro staffers for our call company, Rocky Mountain Hunting Calls. And he said, oh, I drew a 27 tag. And I said, you're in luck. I said, I can take you right, and I'm going to show you where some big bulls are at. Well, we got over there, and the reason I wasn't using my Onyx map that day, there was no reception, and I forgot to download some of those units right there. But Dennis had downloaded, Dennis had downloaded all those units. So we get over there, and we're walking up the hill, and I show him the fence line, and he's looking on his phone, and he goes, that fence line to the left is all New Mexico. He said, straight up the hill, behind the other side of the fence is all Arizona. And I said, are you kidding me? I said, I've been letting those elk go, and they're on New Mexico. I said, all right. So Dennis spent the night with me. He gets up the next morning. He heads into the Arizona side. I crawl over the fence, and I get over there, and I'm chasing elk all over the place. They're bugling, and I'm having a great time chasing elk. Well, I spent all day, and finally, it was getting like an hour before dark, and I started back down the ridge, and the bulls were bugling up on top. So I'm just going to leave you guys till morning. So I headed back down, and I come on this water hole. Water hole is like 100 feet long and 60 feet wide. And there was moo cows there, and they were standing in it. And the whole pond was just full of cow piss and cow manure. You know how cows do. Well, I said, I'm just going to sit here and just listen to the elk. And I know where I'm at now, and I'll find my way back out to my four-wheeler down the canyon. And I sat there a few minutes and kind of up off the edge of the bank a little behind a little bushy tree, and I let out a bugle, and I hear this, and it's coming down the draw up towards me, and I go, man, I got 20 minutes of daylight. Yes, I hope he makes it. So here comes this bull. Pretty soon you can hear him trotting, clunkety-clunkety-clunkety-clunk. He runs right up on the bank of the cut bank of the dike. Uh-huh. And he's looking around, and he's like 65 yards from where I'm at. And I said, if he comes along that bank on the other side, that's a 50-yard shot. Well, he looked at that water, and I couldn't believe it. He was like a Labrador dog that jumps off those docks to go retrieve something. He ran and leaped in midair, hit that water, and just was rolling and splashing and swimming and just having a good old time. Here I'm ranging him, trying to get him to get a shot, and he's swimming everywhere. Pretty soon he comes out up on the bank on the other side, and he shakes the water off and the mud off, and he turns broadside, 50 yards. I let the arrow fly, and he just stands there. And I was like, dang, I couldn't have missed. He didn't even flinch or nothing, but it was still legal shooting hours, but it was getting that time of night where you really couldn't see what you did. And I didn't hear nothing. I didn't hear anything. And he walks up the bank a little bit, and I'm knocking an arrow, and all of a sudden he looks at that water, and he runs and jumps in that water again. And he's out there swimming around. I said, heck with this noise, and I just get out of that little blind I had established and walked up to the bank, and he sees me, and his eyes flare up, and he starts swimming towards shore. And when he turned and walked away, you could see the red blood just squirting out in the water. And I did. And he gets up on the bank, and the blood's trickling out. I pinwheeled him. I mean, I couldn't believe he was still standing. And he's kind of wobbling a little bit. And I said, I'm taking any shot. So I let an arrow fly, and I hit him in the spine. And he flopped down the bank, and he rolls down to the water. Guess what? He does the dying butterfly stroke sideways out to the middle of the pond. He's out in the very middle, and I'm going, you're kidding me. About that time, bloop, 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 he sinks. And I go, sink?
Elk don't sink.
And he's out of sight, clear out of sight. And now it's dark. So I grab my flashlight, and I get a big walking stick, and I step into that pond, and I go up to my knees instantly in mud.
Uh-huh.
So this isn't good. But I kept working my way out there. And pretty soon I'm clear up to my chest and cow pee, manure, water, and it stinks. It's bad. I'm reaching with this big long stick out there trying to locate this bull, and I couldn't feel nothing. It all felt the same, and pretty soon bubbles started popping up in front of me, and this bull lifted right up in front of me, just come right back to the surface. So I grabbed the stick and kind of got a hold of a horn, spun him towards me. And I can just pull him into shore. Yeah, right. Take an 800-pound apple and start pulling in mud clear to your knees. And I pulled and I pulled and I pulled, and I finally get to shore. And I was exhausted. I just laid down in that mud and just laid there breathing hard, going, dang, this elk wasn't worth it. I looked at my watch, and it was quarter to 12. And I said, I've been fighting this elk that long? Well, I still couldn't get him up the bank, so I ended up having to gut him right there. And I got him all gutted and got it taken care of.
Oh, and all that nasty water get inside him?
Yep, it did.
Oof.
So I went ahead and went to camp, and made a phone call to Jim Brennan. Jim Brennan was down there. Jim Brennan was down there guiding for an outfitter, and I called him and told him I had a bull down. He said, I'll be right there. So he jumps in his rig that next morning. He gets there at daylight, and we go up there, and he helps me pack him out. But, dang, that was a workout on a bull. So
I bet.
Anyway.
Nothing like piss-flavored meat, too.
Yeah, you know, he didn't turn out too bad. I got him back to camp and got him hung up, and there was a cattle trough there with some pretty fresh water in. We washed him all down and got him cleaned up and headed home. So,
nice. Did the guy that had the 27 tag, did he punch his tag?
He did. He ended up killing a 360 bull over there.
Oh, nice.
You know, he was hoping for a bigger one, but he decided that was good enough. And he took it.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know if you know who Dennis Howell is, but he's one of the best bow hunters ever survived in this world out of Colorado. You know,
I do know Dennis. I don't know him personally, but I know who he is.
Unbelievable hunter. Greatest guy. Funny. He'll have you in stitches all day long when you're around him. Yeah, he's a pretty neat guy to be with. Yeah. I got one more story I want to share with you, if you got time.
All right. Sure, why not?
You know, last year we put in for New Mexico again, and we put down our first choice, second choice, third choice, and fourth choice. And, of course, we drew the fourth choice. Knew nothing about that unit. And I'm going to say it right now, Unit 51 is not a place to go. Don't ever go to New 51 in New Mexico. We got down there. We went down and scouted pretty hard. We seen some elk, nothing big, a lot of 250 class stuff. And there wasn't a lot of elk. They were just scattered everywhere. So opening morning come along, and I headed up the hill and hunted around a little bit and didn't see much and spent the night. And next morning I get up and go back up another ridge. So I'm hiking along and I get into some cows, and these cows are coming up a draw. And I thought I could see a bull coming through the trees, so I stepped out on this rocky ledge, and it's like 50 feet looking into this draw of boulders. Mm-hmm. And I stepped out a little bit further on this rock ledge, and all of a sudden this rock went up underneath me. And my bow went up in the air. I spun around backwards and flew through the air and landed upside down on my backpack on those pile of boulders. Whoa. And I was sitting there kind of like, dang, is this really happening? And all of a sudden, here come that big rock that I stood on down the hill. It rolled right over me and slammed me right in my, you know, on my knee and landed on top of my knee. And I got to where I could push that rock off. And I knew I was hurting a little bit, but I didn't know how bad. And I started to sit up and got up to crawl up out of there. And, man, my knee hurt like a son of a gun. And I said, I don't know if I broke it or not, but it sure hurt. So I crawled up the bank, got to my bow, hung my bow on a limb, took my backpack off, and I had my phone with me, and I got the phone out and was trying to call my hunting partners, and they were out hunting. Of course, they had their phones turned off. Couldn't get a hold of anybody, and I said, well, I guess I'm going to have to hike out of here. So I started walking, and I went about 50 yards, and the pain was so unbearable that I was like, sweat started running off my head, and I started shaking. And I finally
texted.
And I finally texted a friend of mine who's sitting here next to me, Lydia Smith. And I just said, text me a picture of you so I can stick that picture out in front of me and I can follow it back down the trail. And she texted me, and I ended up walking 4.5 hours. I don't remember how far it was. It was close to 3 miles, but it took me 4.5 hours to get out of there. And halfway down the hill, I got a walking stick, and I was walking down, and that stupid walking stick broke, and I fell down, and it ripped even worse. So I finally got to the four-wheeler, made it to camp, went to bed. I took the Tylenol, probably too many. Went to sleep that night, and I didn't even hear the guys come in from hunting. The next morning, I didn't get up, and they come over and said, you going hunting today? And I go, no, not feeling like it at all. So I told them what had happened, and they said, well, just go ahead and stay and rest, and we'll take you to the doctor a little later. And I said, well, we'll see. So midday come by, and I get out of bed, and I get up, and I'm hobbling a little bit, doing a little better, still hurt. They come back to camp, hadn't seen nothing. Next morning, George Laws, the guy, another friend of mine hunting with, he said, I'll go with you. Let's just go tinker around, ride four-wheeler. So we take off and rode a four-wheeler that morning, and we parked and walked up on this ridge about 100 yards, and I couldn't go no more. It was just hurting bad. And I told George, I said, just walk over the hill there about 40 yards and set up, and I'll just sit here and just cow call, and I'll bugle a little bit. And I'd fire off some cow calls, cow mews, and cow chirps, and I let off a little bugle a couple times, and this went on for about 3-4 minutes. And all of a sudden I hear this, and I said, that was an elk. And I said, where in the heck did that come from? And here I'm standing with my bow in my hand, no arrow knock, and I hear a clunkety, 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 clunk, 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 clunk. Here's a 300-inch class bull standing in front of me at 8 yards, no arrow knock. And I was like, that was stupid. So I slowly pull an arrow out of the quiver. It goes, and the bull kind of flinches a little bit. I get the arrow out. I get it on the nock, and it goes click, and he's still standing. I said, man, I've got a chance. And I just get half drawn, and he whirls and takes off. Oh, gone. Geez. George, he comes walking up. Yeah, George comes walking up to me and goes, what the heck happened? He said, I heard the elk come in. I said, well, I just pulled a stupid. I wasn't ready. I should have been ready no matter what. And so we walked back to the four-wheeler, and we got there, and I look across the draw. I said, man, that's a beautiful place right there for an elk to bed in. So we walk over there about 50 yards and come to this pile of pee, and it's still foaming. I said, that elk was just here. It was just here. George, run up 30 feet, 30 yards, whatever. He runs up the hillside, and goes out of sight, and I start bugling and cow calling like I do. It's just a silent calling routine is what we do. And mm-hmm. I hadn't been into it, not even 30 seconds. I hear a shunk, the bow goes off, and crash, 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 crash. And then it stops. I go, son of a gun. So I walk up to George, I hobble up to George, and I said, what happened? And he goes, man, he said, I shot a bullet 3 yards. He said, it walked right in coming toward your sound. He said, but the arrow flew out when I shot. And I said, what do you mean? He said, I don't know where I hit. I just put all the pins on him and let it go. And he said, the arrow just flew out. And I said, where's the arrow? And he said, it's laying right up there. He said, I think I shoulder bladed him. And I said, well, you know, I heard the elk run like crazy, and then it just quit. I said, I think something else happened. He said, well, don't go looking for it. He said, let's give it some time. So we sat down and had a sandwich. I get up impatient, and I walked up to the arrow and picked it up, and there was a little blood on it, not much. And right. I just looked ahead. I looked ahead like 30 yards, and I turned around and walked back to George. He goes, what'd you find? I go, well, not much. He goes, what do you mean not much? And I said, well, it wasn't much of a bull you just shot. It was just a little 4x5. Yeah. He goes, you found him? I go, yeah. They're laying right there dead in a doornail. And so we walked up there, and it was pretty cool that he got an elk like that. And it was pretty tough hunting. So the rest of the week, I was kind of laid up, and I decided to hunt water holes in a blind, and it started raining and never quit raining. It rained every day. And the last day of the season we could hunt, I was sitting on the water hole, and it was just pouring down rain, and I finally had an hour left, and I said, I'm done. I'm going home empty-handed. I unzipped the door to get out of the blind, and here's a bull standing right there looking at me. And I zip it back up, and he walks right around to the water hole. I thump him. He turns and runs down the road and falls over within 20 yards of my four-wheeler. Oh, and I was like, you got to be kidding me. So we loaded the elk up, got him back to camp. The next morning, I was headed to Idaho because Misty's coming in to go hunting on the 17th. We leave the morning of the 16th. So George and I drive all day and all night, get there the morning of the 17th, set up camp. And I knew I was not going to be much hunting in because of my knee. I hadn't even been to the doctor yet, but it was still hurting. I told George after we got camp set up, let's take an evening drive. So we drive out up this road and park, and I get out of the pickup and walk about 30 feet. I let out a bugle, and I hear, I hollered at George. I said, George, grab my bow. He goes, what? I said, grab my bow. He gets my bow and walks up. I said, I had a bull bugle. I bugled again, and here he comes. He was on a dead run. I said, George, run up the hill 30 yards. So he runs up the hill to my left 30 yards, and I'm standing in the middle of the skid trail with my hex suit on, and this bull runs up and stops just below the skid trail at 40 yards behind the only stupid tree on the hillside. And I'm at full draw, and I'm going, George, bugle now. He needs to hear something. George, bugle. And nothing was going off. Pretty soon I hear this. George is fighting the reed trying to get it to say something. Pretty soon it goes, squawky sound. Well, the bull heard that and took that one step forward, and I let that arrow fly. Hit him perfect behind the shoulder, and he lunges up into the skid road, faces me, and starts wobbling and walking towards me and falls over within 20 yards of me.
Oh, God. Unreal.
So my hunting That's season awesome. Went really good for a wounded guy.
Seriously. Unreal.
It's pretty cool. Pretty cool. That just happened last year.
Wow. How's your knee?
You know, I went in October 13th for surgery, and when that rock hit my leg, it chipped a bone, piece of bone out, an inch long and an eighth inch divot. And that chunk of bone slipped down in between my meniscus, and that's what hurts about it. It shredded my meniscus. So they went in and cleaned it all up and did surgery on it. And I fought it pretty tough all winter long. And just about 3 weeks to a month ago, I started to say, I've got a chance for hunting this fall. So now it's doing pretty good. It's still some tender spots, but I'm hiking and walking better. So I think I'll be okay.
Nice.
When you get older.
Man, those are some interesting stories, I can tell you that.
Yeah. you know, it's fun to go out elk hunting. I can't wait for it to happen again. So maybe some new stories will happen. I've got stories that I can share with people forever if I had to, but those are some interesting times.
Yeah.
But, wow,
those are good. Those are memorable ones for sure.
Yeah. But anytime you want to call and talk some more, just give me a holler and we can do some more stuff and cover some more areas if you want and talk about elk hunting, elk calling and techniques and strategies and all that stuff if you want.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely want to have you on and talk about calling and all that stuff. We'll probably right before season. That's when I like
okay.
to release some more of those. And yeah, we'll definitely
right.
get you on. Well, thanks, Robert.
Good.
Thanks for taking the time and you know, sharing your stories with us.
Okay.
They were definitely entertaining.
Yeah. Real quick, if people want to know about our company, Rocky Mountain Hunting Calls, they can go on our website, rockymountainhuntingcalls.com, and we are offering a special right now of our new line of elk calls, the Wapiti Whacker Grunt Tube, the Voodoo Cow Call Open Read, the Black Magic Diaphragm, and the Reaper Diaphragm, plus a call case, and it's $89.95 for the complete kit, and that includes a free hat and a free t-shirt in the deal too. So if people are interested and want to know more about us and our company, just check out our website for us.
Absolutely. I'll put it in the
okay.
show notes too, guys. So
All right.
Thanks a lot, Rocky. Thanks again for coming on, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, you too, and good luck hunting this fall.
Oh, I'm going to need it. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Hey, guys, want to stay connected with the podcast? Check out my blog, johnstallone.me. That's www.johnstallone.me. And you could go on there. On the top right-hand corner, there's a little subscribe box. Quickly put in an email address, hit subscribe, and boom, you're done. There's a lot of great information on there, a lot of posts that go hand-in-hand with the podcast that we do, plus gear reviews, plus we have the signature t-shirts on there, the I Eat Fast Food t-shirts, and the Tuesday Coosday shirts. It's a really good way to stay connected with the podcast. And thanks for listening.